Hey everybody, welcome back to the Starting a Counseling Practice podcast. I'm delighted today to be talking with Natalie Kohlhaas, talking about her beautiful journey in becoming a therapist in private practice, launching courses, writing books, and all the rest of it. Natalie, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much. It's great to actually sit down and talk with you today.
Same, same. So this is the question I always like to ask everybody when they come in. And just a minute or two, why did you decide to become a therapist?
So it is, I will say I'm one of the anomalies that are out there. Most people wander through their journey and eventually find themselves in their place. And for me, it was in high school. I took my first psychology class and I said, that's it. That is what I'm going to do. That is what I want to be. It just spoke so much to my soul. Now, actually stepping into it took a lot longer. My parents were like, you want to do what? You can't do that. You won't make any money. What are you thinking about? You need to go do something else. And of course, being the good girl, I tried something else and said, nope, don't like it, don't want it. I'm going to go right back to what I know I wanted to do, where my soul is kind of pulling me towards. And stepped into it, and I've been doing it now for, gosh, 27 years. Never looked back. Happy as can be. Love it. Just love it.
I love that. Yeah, I'm one of the weirdos. I have an aunt that said I said I wanted to be a psychologist when I grew up when I was five. And I'm like, how did I even know? Like, I didn't go to therapy as a kid. Like, what is that about? Like,
I
all those
love
different
it.
pieces where you're like, what is there? But sometimes it's like a part of you just sort of knows and is like, this is the direction. And I think it's I think of myself as a parent, right? How easy that is to inadvertently like make people question their own intuition and their own knowing.
Yes.
Right. And so, like, where can I, like, as a guidepost for my child, and also I think for other therapists, right? Because I think we have seen from the inside of it why your parents would be concerned, right?
Sure.
Like, where
Yes.
people really struggle.
Like, are you sure? That sounds a little, but okay.
There's a lot of people that do struggle to get paid in this profession. There's a lot of people who are exploited in our profession, which is really sad. And yet there are beautiful anomalies as well of people who are like, no, I'm really well paid and I get to do good in the world and like this is so impactful, right? So quickly, but at what point did you actually start like studying psychology and then how long did it take you to get through the licensure process?
Once I decided to dive in, I had already gone through school and then decided to go back in, right, get my master's. So I was working. And then I did a 2-year program that was an intensive program on the weekends, so I could continue to work and then do school all weekend long and then dive back into work. And then, of course, then you have to try to figure out, and then how do I do my internship and how do I do my practicum? And how do I juggle work and how do I juggle school? And at this point in time, we started having children, and now I have a baby. How do it was, when I look back, I really don't know how I made it through all of that. I'm very glad I made it through all of that. All I can say, it's, youth and energy that you have when you're younger, and you're just kind of like, I don't know, I'm just going to keep going. So it took 2 years for the program to be finished. After that, in the state of Georgia, at that point in time, it was 2 years from the date that we graduated to we could go ahead and apply for our associate licensure, did the national boards, took the national boards, got my associate license. Then you have a year after the associate license before you could get your full licensure. Now, all of those laws have changed because that was way back when in the olden days. So it took quite a while. And one of the things I work with also are students. So I'm a clinical supervisor, and I work with students going through the practicum process and the internship process and kind of walk them through what they need to do and how they can hone their skills, and kind of find their niche and the type of people that speak to them. And in doing so, I try to explain it to individuals that it's almost like getting a medical degree, right? So you don't just go to medical school and then you immediately start seeing patients. You have to go, you have to do rounds, you have to do different specialties. You need to step into doing all these crazy hours. You have to work underneath someone for a while. And our practice does the same thing. They do the same thing. We don't just have you go to school and that's it. You tick off the box and you immediately start off. You have to have all that practical experience in order for you to be able to really begin to step into this and to do yourself justice. And of course, you always want your clients to feel like they are well cared for, and supported, and they walk away in a better place. So.
I love that. I think this is one of the pieces, and this might be a hot take. I don't know if you would agree or you'd be like, think that was crazy, but so many times people ask about like what graduate school should I go to? And they put a lot of time and energy into it, kind of from the standpoint of, oh, this is going to be all the training that I'm going to need and do. And I really talk with people about, yeah, your graduate program is important, but it's actually what happens after that is the bigger investment. And if you're investing, in some cases, $100,000 or $150,000 into graduate school, you're doing it wrong. Like, I would rather you, if you were going to do that, go to a state school. Like, even if you're like, oh, that program isn't that great, like, it's just the basics. And now take that other $80,000 and invest it into your training postgraduate, and like, it's going to be night and day.
Completely agree. And it is interesting, right? So many students, they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like school is just as you said, it's giving you a basis. It's giving you all like the theory, and then it's giving you all the pieces of information that you can then figure out what do I want to build onto and with. It's not going to tell you all of those pieces. That's right, where it comes after. What do I want to delve into? What type of certification programs do I want to learn about? Where are the teachers that are still well known in the field that I can actually do some courses with and sit with and, dive in deeply into saying, this is the thing that I know for whatever reason is speaking to me. So I want to try it with my clients and work in that. But it is interesting. It is not the school. It's not the school. It definitely is. Where are you going to put your time and effort once you're done with the school?
Absolutely. So tell me, how did that process go for you at the point that you were done with school and you started going through that windy road to find your magical place? Tell me about your journey.
So, I was very, happy that I was able to get an internship in a place that no longer exists now. It's called the Atlanta Anxiety Institute. And it was a practice with a couple of psychiatrists. There were five therapists and two nurse practitioners. And so it was a big group practice.
And it
And
sounds like collaborative,
it
different.
was very collaborative, very much so. And it was actually, they would do individual therapy, but it was also outpatient therapy. So we had groups and we did full outpatient day programs. And for me, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to dive into anxiety. So that was the thing that spoke to me. I was able to get in with them. And I will tell you, The women in that practice that were there that mentored me, I still to this day am able to keep in touch with them, and they are so dear to my heart. They really took me underneath their wing, helped build up. Because, when you're first starting out, you have that imposter syndrome, like, I don't know what I'm doing, and oh my gosh, what am I going to do, and all that. They really guided me and allowed me to kind of grow into who I wanted to be and provide me options to see some of the best parts of themselves and to figure out how I wanted to incorporate those. So I started there. After that, I was able to work with them for a short period of time. Then some of the therapists that I was with, we started our own group practice. And it was a group practice in the way, I don't know if many people do this, and I hope they do. It was a couple of different therapists. We rented a space together, but we had our own brand, our own names, our own stuff, and we had an umbrella of what we called ourselves under this umbrella. So we utilized each other. So it was kind of like being on your own, but not being alone, which is really hard as a therapist, because so much about what you do, you can't go home and talk about. You can't, look for that, let me tell you about how my day was kind of thing. And having other people in the office that you could go next door and you could knock on their door and you could talk with them and you could run things past them was fantastic. I loved that. I just loved it. And so with that, I kind of continued on that same pathway. I always looked for other practitioners that I could pair with. And whether it was that we were under the same name or we had our own name, but we were, again, just sharing space or sharing two different offices in the same space. I've continued that practice. And that was in Atlanta. Eventually, we moved south of Atlanta. And so I ended up moving down into another area where we had another beautiful woman who purchased a building. And it wasn't didn't matter if you were a therapist or if you were an esthetician. We had somebody who worked with adopted children. We had somebody else who was a Reiki healer. We had a massage therapist. But again, we were all under the same roof, and we could all talk with each other, and we utilized each other in our marketing. So we all put our forces together and use that to ensure that we could market ourselves.
I want to
After,
jump in for a second, because I
yes.
love this. People are still doing it. I think, though, sometimes people get a little messy with it because they look at the outside of what's happening and they think that all these people are actually doing a business together and that they're sharing bank accounts and that they're sharing things. And
Right.
that's where things can get really messy.
Yes.
So it's a really important thing to understand the difference between a co-working kind of an experiment or a co-branded experiment, having an LLC that's separated out and then having your own piece versus
Yes.
when you're like fully commingled. And I always like to put that out there because a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I'm my friend, or I met this amazing person. We're gonna go do this thing together.
Yeah.
If you go into business together, like truly into business together, you are marrying this person. Your credit is impacted by this person. Your ability to lease space is impacted by this person. Even if you are like signing a lease with someone, and sometimes we have really good intuition about things. Some people are disconnected from their intuition. Check the other person's credit. Like, check what's happened in the past. Like, really have some conversations before you get too enmeshed and too commingled with somebody. And you
Definitely.
don't have to get fully enmeshed and commingled to be able to have these kind of collaborative environments.
Yes.
And so I like to encourage that. I'm sure at some point, as many beautiful experiences as you've had, there's probably been at least one or two where you're like, ooh, That
That got a little, exactly, yeah.
got spicy. Yeah, spicy things happen. So something just for those listeners to think about is knowing that there are ways to ease into that, to develop that bond over time, for one person to be the main person on the lease and for someone to sublet as opposed to being on the lease together. Whenever you are creating some kind of a contract together, always start with basically a prenuptial agreement. This is what will happen when or if one of us wants to separate from this. And fortunately, unfortunately, like my job, sometimes people are contacting me to get out of really funky contracts. Which is really unfortunate. And so I've seen the contracts where basically you could be losing money and the contract says you have to just keep paying into this thing, like there's no way to get out of it. It's wild the things that people have signed on to. So just be really thoughtful. Know that there's lots of ways to do this. There's lots of ways to get collaboration. Sometimes just getting a great sublet in an office like what you're talking about is like, oh, magic.
Yes. Again, right. Everybody does their own thing. Everybody is separate. And yet you are utilizing each other, referring in between each other, discussing and collaborating as far as this is a really interesting case. I'm not quite sure where to go with that. Having that support is fantastic. What I've done recently, though, is I've stepped into a different arena now. So I started right as I do when I work with students. And the way I mentor students is I literally have them sit in the room with me and a client and watch us do the process. So it's kind of like being a fly on the wall. They see the process happen. They understand what's going on. We talk about what happened afterwards. They ask questions. They wonder why I did this or why I didn't do this. They're actually learning by observing. And then I slowly start bringing them in and having them continue. So it's like having two counselors in with the one person and then work them out into now you need to start doing your own people all on your own. So in that process, I found some really fantastic counselors that have worked. We've worked really, really well together. And so then I've offered them a position in the company. So slowly growing the company up and slowly adding counselors in is the this is the phase that I'm in at this point in time. So we have one, two, I have three counselors right now, a fourth one who's just going to be starting in a few weeks with us. And so that is kind of that next phase that I moved into in trying to create now what I would consider more of a group practice rather than a practice that is a group.
More than like a, hey, I want some collaborative space, but you're moving into more into your leadership role of I want to train up this next generation. And I think what you're sharing, that is really hard to find. That is incredibly hard to find people that will train in the room, on the space. Like most people get zero of this kind of hands-on, what does therapy look like in the real world, in real practice, with real people? And I think that is a lot of, you talk about the imposter syndrome, you're literally walking in and you saw a couple of videos of Yalom, doing therapy back in, whatever year. And then you walk in a room or you do like a fake therapy session with someone and you role play, and then suddenly you're sitting in a room and this 12-year-old kid's looking back at you and you're like, wait, what am I supposed to be doing? They're like,
What am
well,
I supposed to be
this
doing?
is
How do I begin to open them up, right? And how do I create a space, right, that they feel comfortable in? So some type of dialogue. And I tell you, I find it's interesting. that teenage boy is often the one that wants to dig their heels in a little bit. But once you get them going, oh my gosh, they're fantastic. They're amazing. So, but yeah, watching how does that process actually work?
Yeah, and I think that is a piece of, I think it's something that we've lost over like the last many decades in our profession. And I love that you are bringing that in such a direct way. And I think it's really imperative to our profession up-leveling over the next several decades. I think there's this beautiful opportunity. And I think especially as so many people have moved to virtual sessions
Yes.
and are working in more and more isolated environments, they're getting less feedback, they're getting less support in developing. And so to bring back not just into a physical space, but into literally in the therapy room, most people never have somebody see them do therapy
Yes.
ever. It's
Yes.
wild.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing, and it's very, I always love afterwards, when we kind of do our little supervision about what happened, the questions that they have, and they go, "Oh my gosh, now I get that. I really saw that happen," right? And just to also, it's nice to watch the videos, and most of those are, of course, with Yalom. He was doing it with some actual real clients. But when you're doing it, in class, everyone's kind of role playing. But to really see someone dive into a deep emotional state and become vulnerable, and how do you walk them through that? That's just something that I feel is not always available for students to be able to experience.
So you have in Georgia, you have a for-profit, and in Georgia, practicum students, it sounds like, can come and work for a for-profit, which I think is a lovely thing. In certain states around the country, practicum students can only work in nonprofit environments. And it really does limit the options for seeing people in various settings and how different that looks in the psychiatric hospital versus in the nonprofit world versus in the for-profit world.
Yes.
And I think I understand where, sometimes they don't want pre-licensed students to be exploited, which is why is what they say is the reason. But I think it's really, this is a great example of how limiting I think that regulation is. And I wish that they would expand that for exactly these kinds of opportunities. So I love what you're doing. Like that's
Thank
really
you.
rad.
Yeah.
Do you find, right? You said like, hey, I've been doing this for 27 years, right? And this is a profession that we can do. Like I have lots of colleagues and clients who are like, they're gonna wheel me out of a session. I'm like, that sounds horrifying to be in the therapy session where you're Gary, oh no, Gary died. Like that sounds really traumatic to me. But do you find that like after 27 years, you're looking at like, okay, well, what is next for the next 30 years of my career? Here's where I want things to shift. Here's where I saw myself, when I started, and here's what I see as I move forward in my career progression. What is that looking like for you?
Yes, so that's that piece, kind of what we were talking about, right? Adding in new certifications, new trainings, new whatever it is. And so, one of the things that I'm also certified in is I'm a clinical hypnotherapist. And so, I've been doing that since I got my license. But the newer thing that we have been working with is brain spotting. We love brain spotting. It's just amazing. Those are the types of things that kind of shift it up and make it fresh again. And then we're I have been working in I'm now a trainer for hypnosis. So I do training classes and I train individuals on how to do it. And again, that for me is very fresh. It's very new. I am at the stage where I feel like in my career where I'm wanting to mentor. I'm wanting to like pass on. Just like the people that I worked with originally did for me, I want to kind of pick up that yoke and walk that direction and continue that process. So it is funny. I was just talking with my husband the other night about, he is getting close to being retirement age and he's looking forward to it. And I'm like, I could do this forever. And he's like, please don't, please don't.
Right?
But it is interesting. I was talking with another colleague about, you need to find that thing that if you could just talk about it all day long, all the time, it always felt great and it always brought you joy. And it's like, well, I already know what that is. It's anxiety. I can talk about anxiety all the time. And I love it. I still love it, still to this day. So,
Well, you wrote a
yeah,
book
it is
on it, right?
interesting. Pardon
Tell
me?
me, you wrote a book about it,
I
right?
did. I
Tell me
did.
about that, the process of how you decided to write the book, how you made time within that while being in clinical practice. What did that look like for you?
So, there's a journey involved in the book. A couple of years back, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. Went through the breast cancer, the chemotherapy, the radiation, the surgery, and eventually came out the other side of that, and then was going to do had reconstruction surgery. I was extremely excited about that. Did the reconstruction surgery, came home, and a week after the reconstruction surgery, I threw a major blood clot. So I had a clot that went into my heart, completely filled my heart, stopped my heart, traveled into my lungs, filled up both sides of my lungs. It's called what's called a saddle embolism. I was very lucky. My husband was home with me when this happened. He called 911. Everything fell into place. I was unresponsive, dead, not here in this world for 7 minutes before they were able to bring me back. I went down again in the ambulance. I went down again at the hospital. And then eventually, what they did is they decided they actually had to freeze me because the only way for them to try to stop the damage was to put me in a frozen coma. So when I woke up, I'm in this hospital. I have no idea what happened at this point. Thankfully, our brains are so lovely when we like to like dissociate and just lose stuff. My brain said, "You don't need to remember any of that." So all that just got erased and went away for me. Again, love my brain. But I was in rehab, went through all kinds of stuff in the hospital. Of course, this is all during COVID as well. I was in rehab for 6 to 8 weeks, and I was kind of in. I remember this moment. I was in my bed in rehab, and I was just looking up, going, "So why am I still here? I mean, the likelihood of me being able to survive that is so very, very slim and small." And I heard my clients' voices coming into my head going, "Well, Natalie, you always said you were going to write that book." I was like, "Okay, well, I guess I got to write that book now." Okay, guess I
I
got to write that book.
mean,
So once I got home, I dove in and I thought, this could be a 20-page book, 50 pages, I don't know. But I just started writing, boom, 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 boom. And the next thing I know, I had 250 pages and it literally just kind of poured out. It just poured out. All of that just came out of me. And so it was really good for me. I try to incorporate my story and all the different journeys that I've been on in my life and how I learned what anxiety is and how to address anxiety. So there's a story that then goes with, but this is how you can look at it. And here's a story, and this is why I look at it this way. And here's a story, and this is something that you can use about it. So I didn't want it to be one where it's just like, let me just tell you, this is what you need to do, right?
A, B, C, D. Here's your
Yeah.
seven-step policy. Here's
Process. All right, here's how it goes, right? For me, I don't necessarily enjoy those types of books so much. So I wrote it in a way that for me, I enjoy. I also don't like a book where I have to wait till the last chapter before somebody tells me what I'm supposed to do. So I started out chapter one. Let me give you a really good piece right here so you can just start out with us. Again, it was a labor of love. It was also a place, of course, we're in pandemic. So many people overwrought and overcome. I'm only one person. I can only see so many people. I wanted to be able to provide the information that I had to as many people as I could. Hopefully, it was something that they could apply, they could utilize, they could think about it differently, challenge them. And if they ever wanted to step in and talk with a therapist, they could, but I wanted to give them enough basis that they had something to stand on.
Yeah, and that they could take that in for, hey, I've already tried these six things.
Yes.
And this is what's worked and this is what hasn't. And now we can go to the next level of maybe diving into the sticky points with brain spotting or fill in the
Yes,
blank.
exactly. Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
really beautiful.
Thanks.
So as you like look back on all of this and you think about your journey, what would be the biggest piece of advice that you'd have for another therapist who is listening to this? They're looking for inspiration in their life. Like, what's the thing that you really want to tell to another therapist who is listening today?
So I always advise, once you've gotten through school or you're looking at schools, please continue to learn. This is a profession where learning never stops. You have to actually be someone who is like a sponge and wants to keep learning in that process. I mean, you learn from your clients constantly. I learn from my clients all the time. And in that learning, recognize where are the pieces that are my strengths, where are the pieces that are my weaknesses, how do I hone them both up? As we know, often our strengths are our weaknesses. So how do I utilize those in ways? But please keep diving in, looking at new techniques, studying with different people. Keep adding in. One of the things I always talk about anxiety is people think of it in this, they think fear and anxiety are the same thing. I go through my book, they are not, they're completely different things. Fear makes our life small. It makes our life small. We don't go anywhere. We don't have anything. We don't learn anything. We don't experience anything. Our anxiety is actually trying to give us enough type of energy to walk into that and make our lives bigger, more, have this beautiful place that's in front of us. Enjoy it in whatever way speaks to you. In the same way, please keep diving in, keep doing those courses, keep learning about new stuff, try it out, see if it works for you, see if it works for your client. If it makes sense to you, do more of it. And of course, if it works, don't fix
I love that. I love that. And I think one of the things that you really talked about was like really checking in with the clients. I mean, this is what like Scott Miller and Barry Duncan, their research around like super strengths and that top 25% of outcomes, that it's all about asking and checking in with the clients, getting feedback and using that feedback to make really concerted specific effort on, oh, here's the thing that I need to shift and do differently. I think
Yes.
what I've seen for some therapists, I think they are sponges. I think they're really good at signing up for trainings. and going through them. And I think actually implementing the trainings and working it in and getting feedback from the client, I think that's where sometimes it falls apart. It's the clinical consultation, it's getting into the room with other people. And so I do see therapists that they're going through a new certification every single year and every other month, and they're in training. Like even in their personal life, you're like, you were in training courses 30 weekends out of the year. Like, where's your personal life? Like, what's going on here? And so there's this really interesting little like balance point of, am I living out what I want to teach to my clients? Do I have this life balance? And am I actually like fully like digesting what I'm taking in? Like, am I digesting it? And I think that's really, really beautiful. So,
Yes.
well, I'm so excited that we got to have this chat today. This was so lovely.
Great. It was
I really
great.
appreciate your time and energy. In the show notes, y'all, we will link to her amazing website. If you want to say it aloud here.
So it's serenitytreehouse.com. And you can also find my book at helloanxiety.net.
Fabulous. So we'll have all of that and you can learn more. Maybe you're in Georgia and you want to check out working with her, or you want to go check out the book. You have an online course that goes with the book, I think, too. Like
Excited
all of
to.
the things. And until next time, we're here at ZinniMe to help you with all those aspects of developing your solo and group practice. So we have over 10 hours of free training for y'all if you want to check that out. Also in the show notes. And until next time, y'all,
Great.
remember you are so important and we need more great therapists out in the world.
Thanks.